going on? It's your boy E. Josiah with Flip the Culture, where the culture won't change until we do. I'm here with a special guest, man, my home dog, Nick Mobley, former Sun Belt standout, man. We're going to get to a little bit of his story, well, a lot of bit of his story, but just the mentality on how he transitioned into the sport. Because Nick, I have a opportunity of a lifetime to be on TED Talk, man, and just my heart behind it. It's bigger than just me because the weight of the topic that I'm going to be talking about. And it's about what happens after the final whistle. Because that final whistle can be deafening, man. Like, a lot of athletes don't even know what that final whistle sounds like because they didn't intend for it to be their last whistle. You see what I'm saying? It's like, well, is the end really the end? No, there's other opportunities. And you see a lot of athletes straining to try to get to a next opportunity, and they lose themselves, trying to find themselves within the sport that's not loving them back again. So,
been there, done that.
I know, bro. That's why you're here. All right. So the first question that I got with you, man, is you joined South Alabama as a walk-on.
Yeah.
Correct? Then you became an all-conference linebacker.
That's true.
Bro, what drove you to keep faith and earn a scholarship and lead tackles despite the odds?
I would say the big thing for me was that I was just focused. And I had the endurance. Because everybody can be focused for a day, a month, even a year. People that really make changes, not even in the sports realm, but just in any realm they walk into, is you have the longevity to last for years, for decades. Yeah. And I would say I was willing to say, like, they didn't deem me good enough for a scholarship. Actually, coach said when we had a meeting, there's a reason why you're a walk-on. So that means they even looked at me and deemed me not good enough to have a scholarship spot.
Yeah.
And I came with a chip on my shoulder, and I was like, well, I'm gonna prove to them and to myself, like, I am good enough. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm older, even the thought process of proving, I think it is a very useful tool, and I think I've outgrew it. Because when I really thought about it, every realm, every arena you walk into, somebody's going to want you to prove something.
Yeah.
And it became very apparent to me that if I have to have the mindset, I have to prove something to somebody, like, again, whatever authority figure, whatever position of power, I'm always going to be beholden to them. And I realized, for me, I was like, this is how you need to move moving forward. You're going to operate in excellence, and your standard for yourself has to be higher than the standard of an arbitrary person in leadership. And as I got, again, it took me time to learn that. And as I was playing, again, when I started playing, I was like, I got to beat out everybody. And I, in a way, I did. But as I got deeper down the rabbit hole of learning myself and learning what God had for me, I really felt that he said, you're trying to chase a standard that will never surpass my own that I have for you.
Wow.
And that is why, again, I wanted to beat the odds, and I did, but I learned a much greater lesson from it.
So, because if y'all didn't know, man, and you probably don't know, but me and Nick, like, we grew up with each other since, like, high school, right? So we trained with a very, very, formidable trainer by the name of Otis Leverett, former NFL player, played at UAB University, University of Alabama in Birmingham, and he went on to go to the NFL, and he created this organization called Modern Day Fitness, right? So we have a lot of people inside of that community that have gone off to the NFL, like your Jameis Winstons, we have some Amir Abdullah, we have some individuals in college football, we have people all over the place playing sports, right? So, take me back to the high school, Nick, right? Okay. It's like, okay, I want to go play to the next level, but I'm going to have to end up walking on to South Alabama. So, like, did you have offers and they just weren't the ones, or how'd that process go?
Definitely. So, whew, MDF, like you said, that is the fam. It brought people from just totally different backgrounds, and we all became family. Like, again, that's how we met. I would say from the standpoint of, you know, high school, Nick, I was very, I want to have the right wording for it. I was very confident, but also very insecure as well at
How's
the same
that
time.
Work?
Yeah.
How's
okay,
that work?
I'm gonna explain because two and usually there's a law of contradiction, but I do believe two, and there's also two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Because in the things that I did, such as like football, sports, and in like my academics and everything, I took pride in like being really good at it. And I, and if I wasn't trying to be the best, or if I wasn't trying to excel at it, then I was like, why am I doing it?
Right.
But on the flip side of the insecurity is just how I carried myself and how much confidence I would have just as myself, in myself as a person. That's what makes this toggling and this weighing of these two, confidence and not confidence, be so surreal for me, because I think there's a lot of athletes, of course me, that in certain phases and areas, I feel like I'm the best thing since sliced bread. There's like, who can come again? Like,
right.
Who's better than me?
Yeah.
But in the same breath of, I am so superior in some ways, but it didn't transition.
Mm-hmm.
And
transition to what?
In my character as a person, and in my understanding of myself as a person. So again, a lot of people, that's why you see some athletes like, oh, I'm such a great athlete, but then they struggle in the classroom, or they struggle in their personal life, or they struggle with relationships, because a lot of times they think, okay, just because I'm confident here, that I've not been called to be better in other places. And that's why people have broken structures, and they're trying to implement broken structures, but try to get great results out of them. And I realized that, man, I'm walking in freedom in other places, but I'm selling for bondage in others. Mm. And I don't want to be like, you know, people will say that, like, oh, that's fake deep. I know we talked about that a few.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's like, yeah. What's that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
In simple, like, to put it out more plainly for some, if you're at the mountaintop in one area, if you're progressing well in one area, it still doesn't mean that you don't experience pain in others.
Mm.
And some of the stuff, again, this went from high school to college to even now, like,
yeah.
Like going through, like, I wouldn't say like deep depressions, but like you can like notice like you're not as vibrant as you usually are.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like your emotions. There's like the fire retardant blankets.
Nah, I ain't never heard that before.
So, because engineering and all that. Mm-hmm. Since I'm an engineer, like, you know, if somebody is like, if there's a fire or there's an accident, they have something where they can put like a fire blanket on you and it smothers the fire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in that way, sometimes like with your like emotions, with my emotions, like no matter what you're feeling, you can feel it, but the fire is not doesn't blaze as hard as or as hot because that blanket's over you.
Mm.
And that's not a standpoint of it's bad. It's understanding of how do you manage it in a healthy way and how you manage it with a community.
And you said something that brought up a quote that Coach O actually said during the training session, man.
One of the many quotes.
Many. Like, his quotes were life-saving.
Oh, yeah.
Not just, you know, on the back end where you're like, damn, man, his words. No, like, we would be dying on sprints, bro, and we go off on this little five-minute tangent. We talking, bro. I'm like, yes,
keep
bro.
Talking.
Please keep talking, please. Coach. Like, but you said something where you said it didn't translate, yeah. Right? And then at Flip the Culture, we talk about the psychology of the athlete, making sure that mentally your mind is able to lead your feet into the situation that you're going. And a lot of times when people talk about athletes having plan Bs, which at Flip the Culture, we don't believe in that. But they say that, okay, if you're supposed to get this athlete a better job or work at this factory or get this family, right, and the mind hasn't gone with the physicality of you being inside this predicament, it's like, okay, are you able to excel at the same rate as what's expected from you? So Coach O said this. He said, you can become a better football player, but it will not make you into a better man.
Okay, I
But becoming a better man will make you into a better football player, right? What's your thoughts on that?
Okay. So, I want to hop real quick when you said there's no plan B. Mm. I wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah.
When you do it
the right way. Yep.
I think when you look at the Bible, even when things go right, when things go wrong, it is a a transition. It is a path of when you follow what God has for you. It's not like it's compartmentalized. It all flows. Mm-hmm. Even when people in the Bible sin, there's nowhere in the Bible that when somebody sinned or has committed an atrocity, they haven't came to God and say, "I honestly repent and I'm sorry." Does He not restore them? Mm-hmm. And I'm taking that example as with nowhere in life, whether things go right or wrong, as long as you keep going, it still brings you to a place. Now, again, you might have to take different avenues. But to totally just say, I have to cut off a journey and start a new one, it's a transition, but it doesn't mean that you just walk off a cliff.
Right.
You just go off an exit. You go take a U-turn, but the journey never stops. Mm-hmm. And I think we have such a, in like American culture is very like point A to point B, stop, start. When life moves at a very, not like a very like a river like sequence. You might have stops, you might have turns, but nothing ever just the end. You always transition or progress into something new or different.
Wow.
But it just doesn't stop. And I think that's what happens with some of the athletes. They're like, well, I have to stop and I have to turn off the lights and I have to shut off and start brand new. It's like when you do anything or you transition or changing to anything, it's not a matter of I have to totally just stop everything. Is have I learned? What have I gained? And how do I develop that into my new arena? And I think that's why athletes have such a hard time because they don't know that it does translate. Mm.
So you were playing at a high level, man. You know what I'm saying? Like you were excelling at a high level. You were doing a lot of good things on the field. And then the situation happened.
Yeah, I was talking about it.
So you had a neck injury that ended your career, and I want to know what mental strategies and structures help you stay purposeful and engage with just team culture, like keeping that team component, making sure that people are there for you during that transition, because I can only imagine how hard it was.
So even going back from my neck injury, I knew about it for a while because I hurt my neck in middle school.
What?
Yeah, so I sustained the injury in middle school, and I just played through it through high school and college. I tore my right labrum in my hip in sophomore year of high school. And so I was playing most of my career injured.
Why?
I'm pretty stubborn. Beyond me being really stubborn, and like I said, I knew I was hurt, and I just made my mind up that there's more for me to do in this game before I'm done. Mm. I think in terms of this, like how I coped with everything, of course, when you have those injuries, I developed a really high pain tolerance. Because, I mean, even now, to a certain degree, I feel it or it hurts every day in a way. Mm-hmm. I think you just get used to it. Because even now, I mean, I'm not sure if the camera would pick it up, but, like, I could pop my shoulder right now.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I don't y'all want to hear that.
Please.
There's women and children watching. They don't need to see this.
I think the mic would pick it up more than the camera, bro. So we don't want to hear all that. We want to hear your story.
this thing can talk for me for a little bit. But put it simply, a lot of ice. Mm-hmm. Had to really get serious about taking care of my body. I think athletes forget sometimes that your body is your product. I wish I kind of understood that a little bit more, but I would put even more emphasis on you have to take care of your body. Because the second your body is not able to, you know, to go anymore, you're done. It doesn't matter, like, if you're skilled enough to continue or if you have the mindset for it. Once your body's done, you're done.
Yeah.
And kind of like what you said, with community, just having a community around you, not staying in the dark. I think a great example of somebody who was a part, even when they felt down. You remember Wendy the Pooh?
Wendy?
Wendy the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh?
Wendy, like the bear.
Winnie.
Winnie, oh, that's it.
Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, my bad, bro.
Dude, not Wendy. It's a,
my bad.
I think it's a dude, bro. Like,
my
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, Winnie, bro.
Winnie the Pooh. My bad.
Oh, Winnie.
Hey, that's why. My bad. Winnie the Pooh.
Continue.
You remember the donkey?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even, like, you know, his mood was always down. But he was in every episode, and I always included him. And at first, I was like, that's a kid's show. It's stupid. Like, that's childish. Like, it don't make no sense.
Yeah.
And I realized if more people would act like him, a lot of the mental health issues would be better. Even if I don't feel good, I can at least be around community. And they'll love me enough to walk me through it.
I never viewed it from that aspect, bro. Because from my flawed perspective, when I was watching it, it's like, I ain't watching it for him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's what happens in society where, like, you got the main character, you have all this dialogue happening, and it's like, hey, I'm not here for him, but you don't know what him being there is doing for him.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about life. Like, as long as you're your own main character, you're gonna be okay. Dang. And I'm saying that from the standpoint of rarely in life is everything about you. You might have moments or splotches where like all the tension is on you, but mainly it's either about the group as a whole, or it's gonna be about, or it's gonna be somebody else's turn for the shine.
Wow.
And again, when it's their turn, applaud for them. And when it's time to put, you know, people's needs ahead of your own, yes. But if you're living your life and somebody else is your main character, like, it's like when they, like, when it's all about, it's your life, but it's all about somebody else.
Yeah.
And then we ask, why are people walking around as clones? Why are we seeing people walk around as shells of themselves? Because they're living through somebody else. And of course, we're all the main character in everybody's life is Jesus. But from the worldly standpoint, when you make everything in your life about somebody else, you automatically create an unhealthy relationship dynamic where they are your source when they can never be that. And then you can never truly take care of yourself to truly take care of them. Again, then we're just reinforcing broken systems because we romanticize them.
So you have a very strong presence of leadership. Not just because, like, I'm your boy, but, like, anytime you walk into a room, bro, it just screams leader, right? So even from your story, it's not just a story, it's a testimony. Because you can get a lot of people to be like, they got five stories, man, but it's like, how did you navigate through that, though? Like, it's almost like nobody's going to watch a movie and it's just a story.
Yeah.
Like, literally, the greatest movies are the greatest testimonies because people like to see perseverance. People like to see somebody triumph at the end, right? They don't like just something ending. It's like, whoa, what happened? There has to be more.
Yeah.
Right? So from your story, it just didn't end with the neck injury. And it's just like, man, you know what? I'm just, you know, I got this five story, right? You've transitioned. And I really do think God is still authoring your story, right? This is not the end. It's just how you transition. And it's a trailblazing just trail for a lot of people that haven't even made that transition yet. You know what I'm saying? So now pursuing civil engineering, what lessons from football and faith help you guide your approach to problem solving and leadership and engineering and ministry work?
I would say, because I'm one of those people, and most people are these type of people, but a lot of people don't like to admit it. Everybody's life, like, how they act in one area or arena, mm-hmm. it's going to trickle over to something else. Very, like, there you got a few very talented people where they can be terrible in every other area, and they can be really good in one area. Mm-hmm. But most people, you're going to see, if they do bad here, you're going to see that same principle be bad in another aspect.
Yeah.
So when I played sports, like, or when I was taking a test, or when I was preparing for a ministry event, I had to take not the same approach, but take the same approach in regards to excellence. Mm-hmm. Because things like if I was taking an engineering test, and there's a lack of attention to detail, I would miss that problem. And I was like, But then I looked on the film, and they would do like. To tie it in with shift or something, mm-hmm. and I missed it, and I was like, oh, I missed that play. It's so much follow through because, again, most people, the habits they take, they're gonna bleed over to other areas. Mm. Once I was watching film and I realized that, I'm like, that's a lack of detail, and I was like, that's similar to what I did on the test.
Yeah,
and it made me understand that you don't have to be perfect, but you have to understand no matter what you put on tape on the field, it's gonna be what's in the classroom. It's gonna be when you're serving people in ministry. And I think just having understanding that you have to have people around you to kind of pull that out of you.
Yeah.
So I think I am very determined. I'm a hard worker. I say one of my best traits is I know how to find valuable people to put around me. Mm. I think there's no way you can tell my story and give it and for it to be honest. Without giving thanks to people like Coach O, Jeremy Towns. When I got hurt and I was able to volunteer and help out around the weight room at mm-hmm. South and help with coaching and training. I mean, when I was in the weight room at South, Matt Shadid, Cody Stout. I was in, like, people that again, mentored me. Then even when I got hurt with football, me having a place to serve, like, I don't think they even understood, like, Coach Deed and Coach Stout. They don't even understand, like, I wasn't, like, oh, I was there to help. I needed that because I needed to be grounded because I needed, like I said earlier, it wasn't like I had cut everything off and had to start again. I had to transition it. And while I was able to transition, it gave me time and planted me enough for my soul and my mental to transition. Mm-hmm. Even as I went to engineering, like, there's, like, Kane Womack, he's a defensive coordinator at Alabama. He's the one that helped me set up a meeting with, or an internship with Mr. Hargrove himself to get me the job at Hargrove.
Yeah.
That's the engineering company that I work with. So, a lot of these things in terms of, like, well, how did you get there? I did a lot of great things, but I would be lying and say I did not have a lot of great people in my corner. Mm-hmm. I would say as well as somebody can operate and how talented they are, if you don't have great people in your life, you're gigantically stunting the potential for you to be successful however you would want to define that.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that you can't do anything great at a high level, at a high scale, without somebody in a group, in a team, to help put together.
Mm-hmm. That's good, man, because I see a lot of athletes, like you said earlier in the interview, that you can't stay in that dark place.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, okay, a team will make you get out that dark place. Right, because there's a expectation for your presence being on that team, especially if they're, and I'm not talking about them homeboys that just want you around because you were this type of person growing up and you did this on the field and people just want to eat off you, right?
Right.
Or eat off the status that you developed through the game, because I see a lot of guys like that, man. Even to this day, they probably don't have the same money or whatever, but it's just because I'm around this guy. Like, I now have the same status that he has. And that's not that's not transferable.
Right.
It's not, right? Because even it's not transferable for that individual that people come around for, because they're draining all the value that they even have. So you're still going home in that dark place. That's not your team, bro. That's not your team. That's fans, right? And fan means fickle and nasty. So when things are going good, they're going to be there for you. When things going south, bro, they're going to get fickle. And you can look up that word, because I don't even know what it means. My dad told me, and I know it's bad. But then nasty, right? We all know what nasty means. Like, it's just like, they'll talk bad about you. They'll be like, dang, they were supposed to do this and not performing at this level. I thought they were supposed to be this. Or, hey, bro, I thought you were supposed to make it to the NFL, bro. You were leading tackles. Why you didn't go? Mm-hmm. Bro, I just said I had a neck injury. Well, you still out there working out and everything, bro. What you mean? You don't want to play 7-on-7? It's like, bro, didn't I just tell you I'm a civil engineer? Right? So it's those people that we encounter. I'm not going to say that we surround ourselves with, but it's those type of people that encounter that's where their perspective of athlete stay. It's on the field,
right?
So from an athletic standpoint, we have to learn how to transition our mind into that new arena to be able to perform at a high level. So in my TED Talk, man, I explore how athletic-driven mindsets persist after sports. So that's like if you say you want to pursue a goal, you know about angles. You play linebacker. Right. So it's like if you take the wrong angle at a goal that you want to accomplish and the time is the ball. Right. It's like if you cut it off if you go at a good angle, it doesn't matter how fast it seems like it's coming. You'll always make it there. But the moment you take a bad angle, bro, it'll miss you. Right.
Touchdown.
You'll get crossed. Right. Yep. Life seems like it's going to throw a pivot and you won't be able to break down and close out and use the sideline as leverage. Right. Mm. So it's like, you know, all these different things in the minds, in the psychology of an athlete. How well does it transition into life? So have you ever seen your faith or perseverance serve as blueprints for others navigating their transitions?
Oh, yeah. I think anybody with any ounce of wisdom knows that you shouldn't learn every lesson personally. Mm. I'm a strong, like, I know me and you, we love to read. We love to look up, like, the arts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's so much knowledge and that can be applied that we don't have to experience. The smartest people learn lessons from other people. It's only the most hard-headed, which I can be pretty hard-headed at times, that you have to bust your head open to learn. And you can do that, and there's room for that. But as you get progress into things, as you get older, It's not that you can't do it. It just gets more and more expensive. Like, you might have gotten one cut on your head. Now you have responsibilities. You have a family. You hit your head now, and now you got a grade 3 concussion. Just because value and consequences and the stakes, they never diminish as time goes on. They always get bigger. But so do the rewards. So does the calling. And that's why they go hand in hand. So I think I've tried to model my life after something that can be followed, but not so it can be it can just be a guide. Blueprint, possibly just a guide, because I've seen way too many people walk off somebody's faith and not gain their own. When the scripture says follow me like I follow Christ, I think people get that misconstrued sometimes because they say, well, all you need to do is follow me, and you'll be fine. I think that interpretation is a little arrogant, because you can follow me, and it will be beneficial until you, or as you, gain your own footing. Because again, I said earlier, a lot of times people are clones of somebody else, and I think, to a certain extent, that's okay, but. Again, I think the asterisk in that scripture is you follow Christ until, as I follow, as you grow in faith, you follow Christ as you have grown. Because the goal is Christ. The goal should, I'm a helper. I help, but I shouldn't be the source. Once you've gotten your footing, I'm just here to help raise you up. If you always have to look to me, to be able to be better, to understand Christ, I've become a hindrance to you. And a lot of times people hold on to good because they're not disciplined enough to go for better.
As you were saying that, man, I saw an analogy in my head of, like, the programming, Yeah. Right? It's like you say you want to go to this D1 program, but your ability does not serve this program. Right? It's like, okay, I'm capable. I was a 6'3 safety, right? If I went to a college or a conference that is run heavy and they need shorter, stockier safeties to be able to fill in with the run, that wasn't my game, bro. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I like to hit hard, but at the end of the day, I was meant to be able to cover big tight ends, big like those big wide receivers out there, but the slot receiver, that wasn't my thing, bro. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So when you talk about putting yourself in positioning from a programming standpoint, what have you been able to do inside of those transition moments where mentally it's like, man, I feel like I'm fighting for my life, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, but I have to get with the right program in order to showcase the abilities that I don't even know I have yet, but I know it's something inside of me. Like, what's something that you did to position yourself well?
So you have to operate within the programming that's still authentic to you. Because even when I went south, I'm like, my last year I played before I got hurt, I'm a 5'10 linebacker. And last season I played, I was like 198.
Yeah.
With a hurt hip and a hurt neck. Mm-hmm. The programming required me, again, to get off blocks, kind of do a little bit of everything, make tackles, do pass coverage, didn't have to pass rush too much. Mm-hmm. So I fit into that programming, but also I fit, but I had to make it fit.
Yeah. Like, explain that.
Okay. You have to make it fit by, a lot of times people go into arenas saying, and sometimes you should pick out like where is the best fit for me, but nothing will ever be a perfect fit. And there are going to be opportunities and environments that you walk into. It's not going to be a good fit. Mm. But how adaptable are you? Mm. I mean, when I went into engineering, when I got the job, I didn't have no previous internships. Most of my time was spent on athletics. And the reserve time was spent in ministry. Mm-hmm. Realistically, I wasn't qualified enough to get hired, if we're going to be honest. Now, does that mean I don't do a good job and I didn't do my best? It doesn't mean all that, but again, you have to look at reality, but that doesn't have to be your final destination. Because understanding that I wasn't qualified, well, there's a simple and easy answer. Get qualified. Mm-hmm. I got in the company with something like, and at my job there, I will say I'm really blessed because there's a lot of very talented engineers. I mean, people with their certifications, people with the certifications on top of the certifications, some people that can work seven to eight projects at the same time and not bat an eye. But if you're going to, you know, get into that arena with them, you got to know that you're not going to understand a lot of stuff they're talking about. You're going to be kind of in deep water. But are you willing to tread it long enough that you can learn? Because, again, most times, it's not the fact that people can't do it. Is do you want to be, they don't want to be uncomfortable enough for that length of time. Again, then we go back to endurance. Because most things can be endured. Some things, again, you won't be able to overcome. But things of that in regards to effort or the mind, most times that's an endurance thing. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you hear the excuse, I don't learn as fast, or I'm not talented in that area. Are you willing to put in the time to be talented? Mm-hmm. Like, I like to draw, and people say all the time, oh, I'm just not good at drawing. That's personally why I pick drawing myself. Because it's not a matter of, are you naturally talented, which you can be. It's a matter of, do you develop yourself in that area? Because there are some people that they're terrible at drawing, like instruments too. It's not like singing where you have a natural, like, at a certain point you have a barrier, like a roof with singing. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't sing. Sorry. But
you
can. Maybe not well, but I'll do it.
Bro, Ratatouille said this profound thing, bro. Your thing with Wendy the Pooh. You know what I'm saying? Mine, Ratatouille. Ratatouille said anybody could cook, but it doesn't mean that they should, bro. So you can sing, bro.
Hey. Hey, I can sing. They gonna if they have a volume button, they gonna turn it off. Hey, that's the reason I don't. Hey, I ain't gonna sing on the podcast. You gonna lose all your followers.
Oh yeah, please don't. Hey, the mic probably will burn up.
They gonna hit unsubscribe.
Nah, hey, but that does. Thank you, man. Like, comment, subscribe, man. Please do it. So you said something about adaptability.
Yeah.
Right. So another analogy that came in my head was the chameleon effect, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, a chameleon changes and adapts his ability because somewhere in this vicinity it may be danger, or he may need to just become a leaf for that particular moment, right? Yeah. But it doesn't change the chemical DNA makeup of that individual chameleon. So what I see a lot of, because we talked about the positive side of adaptability, right? But I also see guys losing themselves inside of predicaments where they become a victim to groupthink, right? So it's like they're a part of this group, they're a part of this group of friends, they're a part of this program, and now they're starting to take on the toxicity of these different things. So how does a person get inside of a program where they're valued? They have a lot of ability to be able to support this particular initiative. They're operating out of their calling, right? But there is some toxic behavior that's in those environments. How does a person shield themselves from adapting to that but still serving inside of their ability?
I would say then that goes into a whole nother definition that operates outside adaptability.
Come on.
Because when we talk about adapting, you adapt in a way that helps you better succeed in the environment. You never see you would never see a chameleon change colors to the detriment that it makes them stick out more.
Dang.
So yeah. When people are like, well, I adapted and it had a negative effect, then you didn't adapt, you succumbed. And a lot of people mix up adapting to what is really, they just succumb to the peer pressure of what was around them.
Wow.
Adapting should make you better in the environment better. Succumbing is you just fold to the environment.
I'm finna go to sleep, bro. I'm finna go to sleep. Like, you just whooped my brain just then, bro. Like, that was dang. Okay. What would you say to a walk-on or an injured athlete trying to find their identity after the sport?
I think it is okay to mourn for the people that got injured.
I want to rephrase that question.
Okay.
It needs to be a two-part question. Yeah. What would you say to a walk-on that's pursuing a scholarship on the particular program or the team, right? Cool. And then the second question is, what would you say to an injured athlete that knows that it's time to hang up the cleats?
Okay, perfect. I'm going to put the asterisk with the walk-on is I know with NIL and everything, there are a lot less walk-ons now.
I don't know the stats with that.
Yeah.
But I will say I was in the locker room experience with a program where, you know, there were walk-ons present inside the room. You know what I'm saying? So walk-ons are still present within those college programs. I just don't know if the numbers have dwindled a little bit.
They definitely dwindled with the NIL and the roster spots. Mm. But for that lone or few walk-ons, I would say make a decision on what you want your experience to be. Because some walk-ons came because they just wanted to be a part of the team, which if that is what you want, that's okay. Some people went on trying to earn a scholarship. That's okay. Some people walked on to be the best player that they could, or all conference, all American, go to the NFL. That's okay too. You have to first define why you even there.
Yeah.
Because there'd be some walk-ons that like, oh, I'm just going to do what everybody else is doing. And I'd be like, what are they doing? But understanding now is like, that was what they wanted out of it. They just wanted to be a part. And again, we criminalize it and villainize it, but we got to stop putting our expectations on people when they never ask for it. So I would say first define what you want. Then once you have defined what you want, go after it with everything you got.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of me, like when I earned a scholarship and all conference, I had to work harder than everybody else. And there were definitely people working hard. It was some hard work for all around by everybody. But I had to have more attention to detail. You you get less chances as a walk-on. They're not entitled to give you a chance. Mm-hmm. I told a walk-on this. I was like, they don't give you opportunities. You take them. Mm. And I've transitioned that over in life. If you want one, if you want an opportunity, be good enough where they can't deny you or just take it.
Yeah.
For the athlete that is knows it's time to hang it up because they've been injured, I think there needs to be a healthy mourning period. I think when people say just transition, you're good, it's over, I don't think that is taking into account that was a huge part of our life and stuff like that. And huge moments and huge events and huge things that are a part of us and people, we need to grieve those to leave it healthily or in a healthy way. And I will also say in the same breath, if it goes past you needing to mourn it, and it takes such a huge percentage of your identity, then it's probably good it's gone. That means you had an idol. Mm. And I think, again, I'm all for you need to mourn it. But I think a lot of times we're saying, how do I transition out of my identity of sports? I think it's God's grace taking away a false identity that can never serve you.
Wow.
And, again, that's not just football. A lot of things that get taken away or status, mm-hmm. you're operating off of something that was never going to fulfill you, and you were always a dead man walking. And God taking that away from you finally, it didn't. You thought that, you know, it was a main portion of you, it was the most important part of you, but I think it's like taking out a disease. You can't yeah. fully heal until you take out something that is dying. Mm-hmm. And I say that because being in sports is to a certain extent, there is an identity factor to it, but if it operates as the mass or as a or in an unhealthy way, I think it's the equivalent of having a cancer cell. Because yeah. you've seen that athlete that's their personality is football player.
Yeah.
And if they operate outside of anything sports-wise, they can't function. Mm-hmm. But we called it functioning because we just give athletes a pass.
Yeah.
And that goes from academics. And I'm not saying you can't be, you can still be real. Like, there's people who are really into sports, really into academics. I'm saying if that is where you find value for your soul in, as good as God taken away.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we don't want what we love to be taken away. And again, I'm speaking from standpoint of a Christian standpoint. So if you're not a Christian, this really doesn't apply to you.
I'll stop that. Because it's still the principle of a thing.
Yes. It's so, the principle. And I say yeah. that with the asterisk because I have a beef when Christians try to force Christian values on people that aren't mm-hmm. Christian. I think that's not biblical.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
But I'll say this. The truth still stands.
This truth,
if
yes.
If you take the religious concept out of it, right, the principle is if you put all of your faith and your hope inside of this thing, your identity, and something that could be taken away, it's like, who are you now and what do you do? You're
definitely.
Still at that standstill moment. So
the truth, yeah. yes. The truth will always stand in that way. I think that's not something that can be forced. It has to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And that is why I say you don't have to accept it, because I can force a flu shot on you if you're dying of flu. But if I had to force something, if you never wanted it, you won't receive it.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people don't have breakthrough, because a lot of the stuff they need for healing is right before them. But we try to force things. And some things have to be, like I said, a flu shot. Things have to be injected. So if you don't want it and it's going to hurt, people are not going to take it.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, now we're on this tangent, people try to weaponize the Bible because it's like, well, I'm telling the truth. If you tell the truth with a sharp edge, that contradicts the scripture that says you need to do it with love as possible. And love is firm, but yeah. love is also loving. Mm-hmm. And you have to do things within a relationship. So yeah. even when people, and like I said, even Christians, to a certain point, you have free will. You can disregard mm-hmm. everything I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like you said, truth will always stand. You can try to redefine truth, but truth has a name and it can't be defined.
Yeah. It's good, bro. Ooh, thank you for being on.
We have these type of conversations all the time.
Yeah, man.
This is another day for us.
Man, that's dope, bro. I feel like it's going to be a lot of athlete psychologists, right? Because you even hit on psychology and you're a civil engineer, right? Yeah. So you hit on a lot of key points that I feel like is going to give a good landing pad for a lot of decision makers when it comes to creating curriculum, creating services for athletes, because that's a strain, bro. Like, depending on what age you started, a lot of athletes start at a very young age. Like, your whole DNA body makeup, the reason why you go to school, started becoming because of football. The reason why you stay eligible is because you can stay on the court or the field or the track, right? The reason why, and I can only speak personally, but the reason why my relationship with God was as strong as it was, because I didn't want him to punish me and make me get hurt in the field, and I still got hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was making deals with God, bro. I'm like, hey, if I do X, Y, and Z Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday when I got to college, hey, give me an interception, bro. Like, give me a tackle. You know what I'm saying? So there was a lot of transactions on why I live my life, and the center of it was football. And I had to heal to really admit that.
But that's why all of it works, because, you know, you talk about this whole podcast and the case studies and TED Talk is about transition. Mm-hmm. Everything that you said, all that is okay if you let it transition right. Just let it transition. Because God never asked us to be the perfect product. He says, will you go on this journey with me? That's what people have to understand of, like, living life with God, sanctification. It's a journey. Like, when people are like, man, I can't wait to die and go to heaven. We, of course, we're in a Western society, so we think about it from a Western standpoint, but the Bible is written from an Eastern standpoint, because it's written by Eastern people. And we understand we're so destination-oriented, but if you really look at the Bible and what it's saying, yes, your final destination is to get to heaven, then, you know, there's a new earth, new heaven combined, but the real pursuit is, whatever stage I'm in, am I living in communion and pursuing Jesus? No matter what stage I'm in. Because people are like, well, can I get this end destination? That's cool and that is important. But from each stage that you're in, on earth, heaven, then heaven and earth combined, are you pursuing God and you loving him in community and in communion?
Again, bro, I appreciate you, man. And if we go off on another tangent, bro, I'm just going to turn off the camera. You know what I'm saying? But hey,
we can do this forever. Love you, bro.
Yes, I love you too, man. Hey, remember, flip the culture, but the culture won't change until you do.
Overtime!